kingdom of darkness. This is Coast to Coast AM with Barbara Simpson on the Premier Radio Networks.
That's me. I am Barbara Simpson, and I'm with you on Coast to Coast AM. If you're just joining us, welcome. If you're with us, you know that we've got quite a program still to come. What do you do when you're a medical professional, a renowned and acclaimed surgeon at a world-famed medical facility, and at the same time, you have some ideas and thoughts about procedures that, well, they kind of go against what has been traditional and accepted? In other words, you disagree with the PC methods and ideas. Well, as you might expect, somebody like that, something like that, causes problems. But if you're the kind of person who knows you're right, and you are also a risk taker, you stick to your guns. And that is exactly what our guest, Dr. Lorraine Day, experienced. That and much, much more. She's with us on Coast to Coast. That's coming up next. I'm Barbara Simpson. Barbara Simpson here with you on Coast to Coast AM. I want to give you a little bit of the background of our guest. Dr. Lorraine Day is a medical doctor, an orthopedic surgeon. She's an internationally acclaimed orthopedic trauma surgeon. She was on the faculty at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. She was an associate professor there. She was 15 years on that faculty. She was chairman of the Department of Orthopedics, chief of orthopedic surgery at San Francisco General Hospital, recognized worldwide as an AIDS expert. She's also a writer, a producer, and quite a woman. And I must tell you that I've met Dr. Day years ago when she was in San Francisco and had the wonderful opportunity of interviewing her then on radio programs that I was doing here in San Francisco at that time. So it's a pleasure to welcome her to Coast to Coast. Dr. Day, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I remember when I was in your offices there years ago on the AIDS issue.
That's right. It was a very big story then, because you had a theory about the danger to medical people during surgery, particularly because of the kind of surgery you did. Orthopedic surgery is a very bloody operation, isn't it?
Actually, it wasn't a theory. It was already proven in the medical literature. It was just that my my position was politically incorrect. And at that time, I didn't understand that AIDS was a political disease, as I soon found out. So all the things that I said about AIDS way back there in 1987 have turned out to be true. But, of course, those who were coming against me have not shown up to say they were wrong.
That's right. Just for the sake of those who really don't understand what happened, what was the attitude in San Francisco, in the hospital in which you worked, about people with AIDS at that time? And what were you trying to say that was a little different from the accepted course?
Well, actually, my colleagues all agreed with me in private. When AIDS first appeared in San Francisco in 1981, they told us who were physicians there that AIDS was not transmissible to physicians through blood. Well, of course, later on it was found to be transmissible through blood. And then we said, well, we get stuck in the operating room all the time. It's the nature of our work. It's not because we're clumsy. We're working on people who've been shot, stabbed, run over, and there are sharp shards of bone coming out of the skin. When we're operating, we're using saws, high-powered drills, and blood's flying everywhere, and all we're wearing is latex gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kept saying, well, drug addicts can get AIDS from needle sticks, but healthcare workers can't. And I said, someone's crazy here. You know, either we're crazy or you're crazy, because clearly this is a hazard. And so eventually, in 1987, on October 2, the government finally admitted, the Centers for Disease Control, that the first healthcare worker had turned positive from a single needle stick, and it was at my hospital.
Mm.
So at that time, I said, either you've been lying to us for all this time, and you should have told us the truth, or you should have known and you didn't know. And so I started speaking out about this. At first, I really didn't go public. I just talked to my hospital colleagues, and we had a committee, and they all agreed that I could start testing my patients with an informed signed consent. Of course, at that time and still today, the only consent that a doctor has to have to test the patient for any disease is for the disease of AIDS, the one that can kill the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And so they all agreed that I could do this, and then the next day it was front page headlines, uproar over San Francisco General's doctor's health care policy on AIDS. And so all of these doctors who were my colleagues and my friends who had agreed to this in private, when they were interviewed in public, they denied it all. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. Why would my friends and colleagues deny publicly what they had agreed to privately? Well, much, much later on, I found out that most of these people had gotten funding from AIDS groups, and they were threatened by the AIDS groups that if they agreed with me, that they would lose their funding.
What was the opposition to it? I mean, why would they be opposed to doctors protecting their own lives?
Well, because the homosexual community did not want to be looked at as a hazard.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not want their practices exposed. And I was exposing their practices because I had taken care of thousands of homosexuals in San Francisco. And I knew what was going on. And they were trying to masquerade as just normal people that were doing whatever heterosexuals did. And that was not true. So I was just exposing that, showing that I said that healthcare workers had the obligation to be tested for the patient's safety, and the patient had the obligation to be tested for the healthcare worker's safety. It was to go both ways, and I got tested regularly, and I said that if I ever turned positive, which I didn't, that it was my obligation to tell patients that I had AIDS.
And yet, that's not even what's going on today, is
no,
it?
No, that's not what's going on today, because what I learned later on, much later on, that AIDS is part of population control. And I didn't understand that at the beginning. When I wrote my book, AIDS, What the Government Isn't Telling You, telling the whole story, and which is still available, everything in the book is true. There would only be two things that I would change. And that is, number one, I didn't know that AIDS was a man-made disease. I have the documents, House Bill 15090, the House Subcommittee on Defense Appropriations, July 1, 1969, where our government, our Biological Warfare Department of the government, asked for the AIDS virus to be made. And I have that document,
mm-hmm.
and that was funded. And then the other thing is, I did not know that AIDS is a curable disease, and it is. I know of over 300 patients who have been cured from terminal AIDS, and they're now HIV negative, and they are totally well, even though they were dying of opportunistic infections of AIDS, and they are well by essentially the same method I used to reverse my what was determined to be terminal cancer.
And yet, that's almost totally ignored in the mainstream media.
Well, that's right, because, you see, AIDS is big business.
In what
AIDS
way?
Very big business, and cancer is big business. More people live off of the industry of cancer than die from cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all money. You just follow the money trail. And, of course, I didn't know that, you know, 14 years ago, and it was a very interesting lesson for me to learn that all of these diseases are big business. There is no health care in this country. There is disease care. And there is no real attempt to keep people healthy or to get them healthy. Now, I'm not suggesting that your local doctor is trying to kill you. I'm not suggesting that your local doctor doesn't want you to get well. Your local doctor is never taught how to get you well. Neither was I taught that. At the University of California, San Francisco, which is one of the top three medical schools in the country, not only was I a medical student there, I took my residency training there, but I was on the faculty there teaching medical students and residents. And none of that time did I nor any of the other professors know what was really going on at the top echelons of power.
Which was what, simply?
The pharmaceutical industry controls what is taught in the medical schools because they provide the funding for research, and so it's the old golden rule, whoever has the gold rules.
Well, the thing that always struck me was how, and I still feel this way even more so because I know more today than I did 20 years ago,
right.
Is that there is no attention to prevention. There is all attention to treatment
well,
of the
design.
Disease. Yeah, and also cutting out parts of the body that are supposedly diseased and then treating you with chemicals to make up for what you lost.
Well, supposedly. That's right. We're only taught drugs and surgery in medical school, nothing else. But you see, there is no disease caused by a deficiency of drugs. And there is no disease caused by not having enough operations. You see, I developed breast cancer. For anybody who wants to see how bad I was, you can go to my website at www.drday.com, drday.com. I had a tumor that eventually grew from the size of a marble to the size of a large grapefruit in less than 3 weeks.
My God.
And I was bedridden for 6 months. At one point, I was not expected to live through the night, and I am now totally cancer-free. Totally healthy. I refuse chemotherapy, I refuse radiation, and I refuse mastectomy.
Mm-hmm.
And I am totally well. And I, interestingly enough, the way I found out about how to get well from cancer was before I developed cancer, and it was from the good listeners out there in radio land who heard me talking about the AIDS cover-up. And they sent me information. They said, if you think there's a cover-up in AIDS, you ought to see the cover-up in cancer cures.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was at that point that, even though I had a hard time believing it, because I thought, here I am high up in academic medicine, how would I not know this?
Yeah.
But because I had found out the government and the Centers for Disease Control and the AMA and everybody else was lying about everything else, I decided to investigate it. And in fact, I had been traveling around the country for a year investigating alternative practitioners, investigating incidents, particular individuals who had developed liver cancer, pancreatic cancer, cancers like that that had are virtually 100% fatal through orthodox methods. And I found out that these people had been biopsied by legitimate doctors at legitimate medical centers, had refused all conventional therapy, and here they were alive and well 12 and 14 years later.
You know, I hear stories like that, and it just gives me chills, because I remember years ago when I was working in L.A. doing a series for television on the war on cancer,
right.
Which began during the Nixon administration and started with, I forget the initial amount of money, was like $1 million or something, and then it went up exponentially, and it's billions of dollars being spent. We really haven't made much progress.
We have made no progress. In fact, we've gone downhill. Now, that's not the statistics that they put out. On my newest video called Cancer Doesn't Scare Me Anymore, I show exactly what's going on. The American Cancer Society was actually set up by John D. Rockefeller and his cronies at the New York Harvard Club, and it was set up to control the information that the public learned about cancer and to encourage anybody to go to a doctor immediately if they thought they had cancer. Then, in the original charter of the American Cancer Society, it is written in that they have to disband the day a cancer cure is found. So they're never going to admit that there are cancer cures, because they're going to lose all of their perks and their six-figure salaries and their limousines and the $400 million plus that the American Cancer Society collects, 61% of which goes to staff salaries and perks. And less than 5% goes to patient care, and there has never been one single major advance in cancer as the result of all the funding of the American Cancer Society.
How do they get away with misleading the public so flagrantly on that?
They control the media, generally. The media is tremendously controlled. I think that there are a lot of people who know that. If you start writing a story, John Swinton, who was the dean and I think the former dean of journalists, and I think a former editor or assistant editor of the New York Times, he said it very clearly in 1953, there's no such thing as an independent press. And he said, we are the jumping jacks of the jackals who run the media and control the information. And if we ever wrote our own opinions, we would be out on the street in no time.
Well, the thing that I know, certainly from having worked in media as long as I have, is that the media operate, particularly with medical things, they operate on the basis of press releases. So you get a press release or you have a medical journal, JAMA comes out with a story that's going to be out, and it is reported almost verbatim, with no questions,
right.
As this is going to give you cancer, or that won't give you cancer, or this is the latest thing, or whatever it is. And within 24 hours, it is across the country as a fact.
Well, that's right. And it's all approved and censored through New York, generally through Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital, and no information can get out unless it's censored and approved by them. You see, people say to me, well, if you can get well by totally natural methods, how come this isn't in the medical journals? All you have to do is look at the Journal of the American Medical Association, the New England Journal of Medicine, and all these other journals, and see that there is more pages, there are more pages in the journal of high-priced, four-colored pharmaceutical ads than there is of medical information. And so if the journal started printing natural healing information, the pharmaceutical companies would pull their ads and there would be no more journal. And this is the same thing that's happening on the major television networks, because now the pharmaceutical companies are spending billions of dollars in advertising directly to the public for Prozac and all sorts of other dangerous medications. And so if the networks started talking about natural healing, they would pull those ads.
Well, you know, that change, which was just within the last year, I think, maybe 2 years at the max, where they're doing these enormous full-page ads, sometimes two full pages for one drug, and all of the television commercials that I've seen, they don't even tell you what the drug is going to do. They're selling you some sort of utopian, you'll feel wonderful. This is the name of it. Go ask your doctor for it.
Well, that's right. And people are doing that, and the doctors are then giving these drugs out. And, of course, there are kickbacks that many doctors get. Pharmaceutical companies will give doctors kickbacks if they promote a certain drug to their patients, and it's all really very, very corrupt. But the important thing to remember is that the incidence of cancer in 1909 was 1 out of 33. And by 1985, it was 1 out of 3. Now it's 1 out of 2. And it's projected that by the year 2020, everybody in America will develop cancer at some time in their life. Now, what is the big change that's happened since 1909? Well, in 1909, the average American ate 300 pounds of grains a year and 200 pounds of potatoes in their natural form. By the year 1985, the average American was eating one-half the amount of grains they ate in 1909 and one-half the amount of potatoes. But the milk drinking had doubled, the meat eating had doubled, and the chicken eating had gone up 300%. Hmm. And it was during that time that the incidence of cancer went from 1 out of 33 to 1 out of 3.
Is it because, and we'll discuss this further, but is in your opinion, is it because we're eating more dairy, milk, and chicken, or is it because the dairy, milk, and chicken we're eating has other things in it and on it?
Both. It's both. And the thing is, it's not only dairy, meat, and chicken. It is junk in fast food. It is sugar. It is NutraSweet. It is MSG. It is all the additives and fillers and the food dyes and everything else. The food is so corrupted, it is not fit for rats. And that's what people are eating. See, there are certain laws that govern our world that we cannot go against, such as the law of gravity. Now, a child may not know the name of the law of gravity, but they understand that it exists quite readily when they first stand up to walk. When they fall, they don't fall up, they fall down.
Mm-hmm.
They learn that that law is operating, whether they know about it, whether they like it, or anything else. If an adult says, I don't like the law of gravity, I'm going to defy it, I'm going to go to a high building and jump. Well, it doesn't matter, they're going to go down. So whether they agree with the law, whether they want to work within it, the law still operates on them whether they like it or not. There are 10 natural laws that operate on our bodies whether we like them or not, whether we are aware of them or not, whether we want to work within them or not. And those laws, when they are violated, will absolutely give you disease and lead you to a premature death. Now, if you work within those laws, you will remain healthy. And it was those 10 laws that I discovered. And when I started working within those laws, I reversed my cancer. And anybody can reverse any disease if they work within those laws. Now, one of them is this.
I'll tell you what, because we're getting to the bottom of the hour. Let's save that till we come back and find out what they are and how we can use them. And then I have so many other questions I want to talk to you about, and I know you've got the answers to my questions, so we will continue. We're talking with Dr. Lorraine Day. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Barbara Simpson. With you on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with our guest, Dr. Lorraine Day, about what, well, it just appears the whole system is a system of lies, isn't it? Sounds like collusion among the pharmaceuticals and the medical societies and even the doctors on many, many levels, on the financial interests in medicine, in treatment, and the media. We're responsible, too. I've seen it. I know how it's done. I know how uninformed and ill-informed most of the reporters are, most of the anchors are around the country in terms of bringing you the truth. Not that we're taking sides on anything, but just bring you the truth and let you decide. You're not given that opportunity. With all of this working against us, what chance does an independent thinking individual have? What chance does an independent thinking physician have to try to look into something else, to try to pursue an idea, and to try to help keep their patients healthy? And for us as individuals, the little people, the ones who are experimented on and who pay the bills with our money and with our lives, what chance do we have against all of that? We're talking with a woman who battled all of that and continues to, and she's a favorite of mine, and we're talking with her right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Barbara Simpson. My guest is Dr. Lorraine Day. I'm Barbara Simpson with you on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Day, before we get too far afield, I want to go back to a couple of things we talked about at the very beginning, just so we can finish that train of thought, okay, where you had your theory about the patients being tested for AIDS and the medical workers in your hospital being tested for AIDS. You also wanted the surgeons, particularly in orthopedic surgery, which is dangerous to both the healthcare workers and the patients in terms of blood and bone, et cetera, to wear protective garments. And you were fought tooth and nail on that. I remember those stories when they hit the front pages of the newspapers here in San Francisco at the time. And you were just pilloried. What happened to you professionally, and what happened to the policies in the hospital?
Well, first of all, what I was looking at is that we aerosolize blood all the time in the operating room. When you're using high-speed drills on bloody bone, the blood is being aerosolized. They did studies at Stanford showing that aerosolized blood could transmit the AIDS virus at least 24 to 36 inches away, which would be the distance from where we were working to our nose and mouth,
mm-hmm.
All right? And so this had been shown, and I said, look, we need more protection. Now, orthopedists around the world had been using spacesuits to operate on patients with total knee and total hip replacements because what it did was it protected the patient from our breath and any fallout from our skin. And so this was developed by Sir John Charnley, who developed the very first total hip replacement in England many, many years ago, and he developed this whole spacesuit, which orthopedic surgeons had been wearing for years. All I did was take that available spacesuit that everybody had been wearing, and I added another filter to it. So not only did it filter the air that came from our breath, but it filtered the air that was in the room so we wouldn't breathe in this aerosolized blood in case it did seed contained the AIDS virus.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the media had visuals, they sort of made it seem that I was wearing these things to the grocery store, that they had never been heard of before in orthopedic or surgical circles, and that I was some kind of a fanatic and nut. But, of course, there was an agenda. The agenda was to make me, who was talking sense, look dumb, and to make the people who were eliminating all public health laws that had been enacted ever since the United States first enacted public health laws, they were eliminating all of them in the way you handle a contagious disease. So when the media has an agenda, that's what they do. Now, the surgeons across the country supported me completely, but the media would always go and interview the infectious disease doctors who had never been in an operating room, didn't know what it was, were afraid of the sight of blood, and those were the people that they would interview.
And just so people know, what was being presented was that Dr. Day was anti-gay, and that she was wearing the suits, was advocating the using of these suits, these space suits, because she was afraid of transmitting AIDS from the patient to any of the healthcare workers. But it became an anti-gay story instead of a health story.
Well, that's right. And they persuaded the public that that's what I was. Now, what they didn't understand at that very moment was that three out of the four people who worked for me in my departmental office at San Francisco General Hospital were gay.
Mm-hmm.
All right? My office manager was gay, and two others were gay that worked in my office. And, of course, I would get death threats, and people would call me up, homosexuals would call me up, and my office manager would answer, you know, "I'm gay, and so what are you saying? I work for her, and she's not anti-gay. So what are you saying?" Well, I was then sent AIDS-contaminated syringes and needles through the mail with letters saying they hoped that I would stick myself and die. And then they said that they were tracking me all around the world wherever I would speak. They would picket me. They would try to get me disinvited. And they told me they were going to inject me with AIDS blood in an elevator somewhere, sometime, so keep looking over my shoulder. I also had threats from the government. They told me that I was getting too close because I was exposing their cover-up, and they told me to remember Karen Silkwood.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that.
That's right. And so, I mean, they were very, very vicious all the way around. The homosexual community likes to portray themselves as being kind and compassionate and gentle and being interested in everybody's welfare. On the contrary, the organizations are vicious, just completely vicious. And I was picketed when I talked to the Sonoma County Medical Association by homosexuals. Fortunately, the police were on my side and just hauled them off in paddy wagons.
Mm-hmm.
But, it was a very vicious campaign. And, you know, the interesting thing is to talk about the two-facedness of everything. The Centers for Disease Control fellows in the AIDS department all agreed with me, but they knew they would lose their jobs. And so what they would do is propose the opposite of what they knew was the right thing to do to placate the homosexuals. Then they would hire me as a consultant to come and say the truth.
Hmm.
And then they would badger me publicly against me. But at lunchtime, we would all get together and they would say, "Well, we support you. And we have you here because we know that you're saying the right thing and we want that really to happen, but we've got to come against you." I mean, it's all so sick.
It is, but I have to ask you, how could you put up with that?
Well, eventually when I realized, you know, at the beginning, when I was hired as a consultant to go back there, I didn't realize that that was what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
When I found that out, then I started saying, "Look, I'm out of here." I testified to Congress. I testified to Occupational Safety and Health Administration at their request. But then I discovered that there was an agenda. The agenda was, we want AIDS to flourish because it's part of population control. This is a plan. And I got a hold of the 1963 congressional record, January 10, where it shows the 45 things that is going that are going to happen to our country to take it over from the inside. And one of them was the promotion of homosexuality, promiscuity, and degeneracy, promoting that as a normal, natural, healthy, alternate lifestyle 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I realized that there was a gigantic conspiracy to promote homosexuality at the highest levels as part of population control, that then I realized I've got to take the information directly to the public and get out of this political thing, because they don't want to control AIDS anyway. So that's when I started speaking out on talk radio and got the information to the public.
And the public was hungry for it.
That's right.
And still is, as a matter of fact.
That's correct. But the good news is that AIDS can be cured. I discussed that on one of my videos called Diseases Don't Just Happen. And if anybody has AIDS and they want to get well, now they have to stop their self-destructive habits. Whether their self-destructive habit is drug addiction, whether it's homosexuality, whether it's promiscuous heterosexuality, whatever it is, they've got to stop it. It's the same way with cancer. You've got to stop your self-destructive lifestyle, whether it is eating what you want to eat or whether it is not being able to handle your stress. Whatever it is, you've got to stop that. But you can reverse virtually any disease known to man.
How much, you mentioned the key word in there was stress. I'm just curious. I remember when the last time I saw you in person, at that radio station in the city, and we were talking in the hallway after the interview, and you were saying at that time that you sort of were looking at the number of operations with AIDS-infected people that you had worked on, and you thought that, you know, you had gotten away with it so far that you hadn't contracted AIDS through
right.
through your work, and that you thought maybe the odds were changing, and you thought maybe it was time to stop doing that type of surgery because you didn't want to risk getting the disease, which would certainly affect you and would affect have a harmful effect on your family. But then after you got out of practicing orthopedic surgery, you did develop cancer. How much of that do you think was stress?
Oh, well, all disease is caused by a combination of three factors: malnutrition, dehydration, and stress. And everybody is malnourished in this country. They're eating plenty of calories, but they're eating empty calories, so they're not getting enough nutrition. But stress, it was not only the stress of having my life threatened, but I was also traveling around the world. I was asked to speak to places like all of the medical societies in Australia. And so I was down there, and I was also running a department. I was working on my PhD in cell biology. I was raising my children. And I was doing all that. Plus, I was operating night and day as a trauma surgeon. So when you operate night and day, you don't get enough sleep. When you get out of the operating room at 3 o'clock in the morning, you eat junk food from the machine because there's not a banquet waiting for you. And so I had a lot of self-destructive behavior. I never used drugs or alcohol or smoking or anything like that, but I was just working too hard.
Yeah.
I loved my job, and I didn't realize what it was doing to me, because we doctors are never taught how to really be healthy or how to keep patients healthy. A doctor has a shorter life expectancy than the general population, and they have a higher suicide rate. So why in the world would anybody go to a doctor for their health?
Well, isn't that the highest suicide rate among medical people, among psychiatrists?
I think so.
I remember reading that somewhere, and yet they're the ones we go to supposedly help us with our mental problems.
That's right. Most of the psychiatrists are really looking to solve their own problems. We could spot those clearly when we were freshmen in medical school. We knew who were, you know, who the people were who were going into it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, medicine... See, the plan I use to get well is totally free except for food, and
mm-hmm.
you have to buy that anyway. So I have a plan, and, you know, when I was talking about this plan, when I was up in San Francisco at a medical meeting, one of my colleagues that I worked with for many years up there at lunchtime, he was talking to me, and he said, you know, I'd like to help you get this started, but you have a great flaw in your plan. And I said, what is that? He said, it doesn't cost anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at him and I said, well, that's the beauty of it. He said, let me tell you, it'll never fly with doctors if it's free. And he was serious. And this was a long-term friend of mine.
Yeah.
And so I thought, so there's corruption all the way down to the, you know, local doctor level.
Are the doctors on the local level aware of how they're being deceived, misled, and used?
Not at all. Not at all. They have the. In fact, they wouldn't believe it if you told them, because doctors have been led to believe that they're the best and the brightest, and there is a certain amount of arrogance that certainly not only creeps in, it flows in like a flood tide, because doctors don't want to be questioned. Doctors always think that they know it all, and it's really a deadly combination. And that means that if somebody, a patient, comes with some information for a doctor, they're going to look down their nose at them, and they're not going to want to hear it. However, a number of doctors do buy my videos, and some of them come to me kind of in the darkness because they don't want other doctors to know that they want to get well, and they know that medicine does not have the answer for cancer or any other disease. That's why doctors are more afraid of cancer than patients. When a patient develops cancer, they really believe that if they go to their doctor can make them well. The doctor knows he or she can't.
Do they really know that?
Yes. They know that. They know that because they see thousands of patients die. That's why at the beginning, I said, I'm not going to do this. I had seen thousands of patients die from the treatment we give them. And I have had colleagues say, I cannot continue as a radiation oncologist. I cannot continue doing this because everybody dies. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some people who survive, but that's not because of the treatments. It's in spite of the treatment. Because, you see, the cancer always comes back after the treatment. But if you have enough immune system left to tackle the cancer, you might survive. Because, see, radiation causes cancer. Doctors will tell you, don't get too many x-rays. X-rays cause cancer.
That's right.
But then they say, now that you have cancer, now we must give you huge doses of exactly what we told you to avoid because it causes cancer. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that you don't want to take that.
Then why? What is their rationale for doing it when they know that on a daily basis that radiation accumulation can hurt you?
Their rationale is they don't know what else to do because they don't understand, and they cannot believe that a 10-step, natural, simple plan can cure cancer when they had to go to school for 14 or 15 years and pay thousands and thousands of dollars and sacrifice so much to learn all of these wonderful things. And then I come along and say, look, here's 10 steps. This will cure virtually any disease. They cannot believe that. But let me tell you this. The whole world is run by 10 commandments, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And those contain 179 words. Now, just the information that is regulating the sale of cabbage in the United States contains 26,911 words. All right? So this is the problem. We cannot think that something simple can actually work. But if I tell you these things that I did, you will see that it makes absolute sense. Absolute sense. Chemotherapy, cancer was not caused by a deficiency of chemotherapy.
Yeah.
Chemotherapy is poison. It began from nitrogen mustard, which was developed in World War I and World War II to kill people. Nitrogen mustard is still used on cancer patients in large quantities. It's not called Cytoxan or Allaran or Leucoran. It is still used. It is meant to kill you. Doctors talk behind patients' backs. They say, you know, are we going to kill the patient first? Are we going to kill the tumor first? But you see, your cancer was not caused by a deficiency of chemotherapy. And, of course, it's not caused by a deficiency of radiation, because both of those actually cause cancer. There are numerous articles in the medical literature, which your doctor will not tell you about. On top of that, I developed breast cancer. My breast cancer was not caused by having too many breasts.
Mm-hmm.
Cutting them off does not solve the problem. You see, what you've got to do is reverse the factors that allowed you to develop the cancer in the first place. Cancer and all other diseases are caused by an immune deficiency. When your immune system is not working properly, you will get disease. So what is it that we're doing that causes our immune system to be suppressed and not work right? It is a violation of these 10 natural laws of health, the first of which is the way you're eating. The only place that your body has to get the raw materials to make new cells is by what you put in your mouth.
Right.
If you put bad stuff in your mouth, your body will make unhealthy cells that will easily get sick, and you will get sick. If you put good stuff in your mouth, your body will make healthy cells. That is really simple.
You know, it's interesting. I remember when my kids were little, I was the kind of mother that would always give them healthy lunches, you know, so that they could never trade sandwiches
right.
at lunchtime because the kids never liked my sandwiches and a whole wheat bread, you know, that
right.
kind of thing.
Right.
But I also noticed that my kids were never sick.
Right.
All their friends would be out for a week with the flu or
yeah.
a cold or an upset stomach.
Yeah.
And if my kids missed 1 or 2 days a school year, that was a lot. And that was the only way I really had of measuring
yeah.
That is that I fed them well and they had a good, you know, atmosphere and surroundings around them and they stayed healthy. So to me, there was a direct link.
Well, that's right. And there is. But doctors are never taught that. In all of my training at UC San Francisco, I nor any of my colleagues had one single hour of nutritional training in all 4 years of medical school.
And it hasn't changed much since then.
No.
We're speaking with Dr. Lorraine Day. We're at the top of the hour. When we come back, we're going to look at those 10 laws to health and find out what they are and how we can perhaps change our lives to make ourselves healthier. I'm all for that. Vitamin pills still a lot cheaper than a doctor's visit. I'm Barbara Simpson. This is Coast to Coast AM. Everybody, this is Barbara Simpson with you on Coast to Coast AM, in for Art Bell this evening. If you pay any attention at all to the news today, you know that there's a huge battle going on in Washington about medical care and medical insurance. There was a story in the news just today in California about a local health care plan that announced a new policy to reward doctors for success in treating their patients. In other words, they're going to give the doctors a reward, probably more money, if his patients improve or get well or survive. It's funny. I thought that was the job they were there to do in the first place, to help us get well. Isn't that what they were getting paid to do in the first place? Well, apparently not. Our guest on Coast to Coast today is Dr. Lorraine Day. She's an orthopedic surgeon who has looked very critically at her profession, her business of medicine, and she doesn't like what she sees. She says it is a business that has everything to do with business and very little to do with the welfare and the health of the patients. And folks, that's you and me. Dr. Day has some fascinating ideas on how to get well and perhaps more importantly on how not to get sick in the first place. Well, that and much more as we continue on Coast to Coast. I'm Barbara Simpson. Dr. Day, you were talking about these 10 rules or 10 laws to health. You started with the first one, talking about food. Elaborate a little bit more on that, and then let's look at what the other ones are as well.
Well, first of all, people need to realize that the average American now will eat in their lifetime 15 cows, 24 pigs, 12 sheep, 900 chickens, and 1,000 additional pounds of assorted animals that either swim, fly, or walk. Now, that's an enormous amount of animal products going through one human body, particularly when our physiology and anatomy says that we're supposed to be eating fruits, vegetables, and grain. Now, I know nobody likes to hear that, but that happens to be true.
Mm-hmm.
If you start thinking about where did mad cow disease come from? Well, mad cow disease apparently came from the cows who are vegetarians being forced to eat meat. They were eating the ground-up carcasses of sheep who died from scrapie, which is mad sheep disease. But then you go back and say, well, where did the mad sheep disease come from? Where was the first case come from?
Yeah.
Well, when you start feeding animal products to animals that are supposed to be vegetarians, they will get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where it came from in the first place. Well, if human beings are meant to be vegetarians and you're feeding them meat, whether it's organically grown or not, the meat will stay in your intestine for a long period of time. And I would suggest everybody try this little experiment. Take a pound of ground round or a steak, put it out on your kitchen counter, leave it there for 3 days, turn the heat up in your house to 100 degrees, and tell me if you want to eat it at the end of 3 days. It will putrefy, and that's what it does in your body, because that meat takes 3 days, whether it's meat, poultry, or fish, takes 3 days to go through your intestine, and in the meantime, it will putrefy. You reabsorb those toxins, and that's one of the major things that makes you sick.
That really makes it sound disgusting.
Well, that's right. Not only that, the meat inspectors tell us that all hamburger is made from what they term 4D meat. That's meat from animals that are dead, dying, diseased, or disabled. And the meat for hamburger in this country is mixed with the meat for hamburger from seven other countries, many of which have no meat inspection.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what people are eating. And since we've changed from a plant-based diet in 1909 with all the grains and potatoes to a mainly meat-based diet by the late 1900s and early 2000s, we have brought all sorts of disease on ourselves. The second leading cause of death in children now is cancer. It was unheard of 50 years ago. Skin cancer was virtually unheard of 50 or 60 years ago. It is not from the sun. Skin cancer is not from the sun. Our ancestors for thousands of years lived outdoors and worked outdoors, and they never got skin cancer. The answer is they were eating a mainly plant-based diet. And they did a study at Baylor University where they took two groups of experimental animals, and they gave them one group they gave the standard American diet, which is terrible, and the other one they gave a highly nutritious diet. Then they exposed both groups of animals to the ultraviolet rays of the sun. In the group eating a standard American diet, 25% got skin cancer. In the group on a highly nutritious diet, not one animal got skin cancer.
So all that talk about the UV rays,
right,
and the ozone layer and all of that is
it's all wrong. It's all wrong. And so doctors are telling patients to stay out of the sun. And sunlight is absolutely necessary for good health. I'll tell you, you cannot grow a healthy garden without sunlight.
Yeah.
And you cannot grow a healthy human being without sunlight. Sunlight does the following. It lowers blood pressure. It lowers cholesterol by turning it into vitamin D. It boosts the immune system, which increases the body's ability to resist infection. Sunlight kills bacteria. It calms the nervous system by decreasing a particular compound called cyclic AMP. It lowers your blood sugar by increasing the absorption of glucose into the cells like a natural insulin. Sunlight decreases resting heart rate, increases your tolerance to stress, and it decreases the size of internal cancerous tumors. And it was one of the main factors in my getting well.
That's astonishing.
That's right, and it's free.
Well, you know, the thing that I always remember about, I mean, I used to like to get a good tan when I was younger, and now I don't because I've been told that it's going to, you know, give me all kinds of other problems.
Not true.
But the truth is, there is nothing more restful than lying out in the sun on the beach or in a park or something and just quietly absorbing that sunlight. It just feels wonderful.
Well, that's so right. And the reason that it's restful is it actually calms your nervous system, because things like caffeine and stress increase a compound in your body, in your cells, called cyclic AMP. And the sunlight actually decreases the amount of cyclic AMP. And it can be shown physiologically that this is the way that it happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What else do we need to do in terms of our food?
Okay. Well, first of all, we have to eliminate all of the factors that are killing us, such as NutraSweet, MSG, sugar, nicotine, caffeine. Caffeine is a diuretic. It takes more water out of your body than comes in with the drink.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's drinking caffeine and caffeinated soda now, and nobody's drinking water. The body loses 10 glasses of water a day just by living. We lose it from breathing, even when it's not from perspiration, even when it's not hot. We
right.
lose it from breathing. Our breath is moist. We'll fog up a mirror. And we lose it because our body has to take huge amounts of water out of our cells to put in our stomach to make digestive juices, and all of that is lost from our body every day. So the cells then start suffering from what you might term heat stroke slowly. And when they get sick, then they start forming tumors. They start causing Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and multiple sclerosis and chronic fatigue syndrome and things like that, because the cells don't have enough water in them to function properly. Water, again, is critical for every single physiological reaction that takes place in the body. Water will decrease blood pressure. It decreases anxiety. It decreases allergies and asthma. It will decrease arthritic pain by hydrating the joint cartilage, and it can cure ulcers. There are 2,000 cases of ulcers that have been cured by water drinking alone published in the medical literature.
I had a doctor on a Coast show a few weeks ago who's an Iranian doctor.
Dr. Batman Gelich, he's a friend of mine.
He was on the show, and I found it absolutely fascinating because everything he said made absolute sense.
Right.
And I hadn't really heard his theories before. You know, I'd heard the usual 8 glasses of water a day, and actually he's saying I need to drink 16 glasses of water a day. And I've been trying to do that.
Yeah.
And it's not easy, but because I'm not basically a water drinker, but I have to learn how to do that. And I think if I'm any example of the average person, yeah, you're drinking coffee and tea. I don't drink soft drinks, but you put all that together, you're not drinking water.
That's right. And people say, well, I drink my coffee, so I get my water that way. But as I said, you're taking more water out of your body. And if you drink alcohol, you know what happens when you put alcohol on your skin. It dries out your skin.
And you get thirsty if you happen to drink too much.
That's right.
One of the symptoms is you're really thirsty.
Well, that's right, because it's a diuretic. And so if you drink it, not only does it dehydrate your body, but it permanently kills brain cells and liver cells. And most of us don't have any brain cells to spare.
or not enough in many cases.
Right. So the whole point is you must drink your water. Mm-hmm. And the reason people are not used to drinking water and do not like to drink water is because they've overcome their thirst mechanism. And they say, well, I'm not thirsty. Well, what does that have to do with it? You are water depleted. I figured out I was 18 years behind in my water drinking. And so I had to really work to catch up. But water was critical in my recovery from cancer. And it's critical in Parkinson's and Lou Gehrig's disease and chronic fatigue syndrome and multiple sclerosis. Water is critical in virtually every single disease. And nobody's drinking it. And it's virtually free. Now, I don't suggest that you drink water out of your tap, because your tap water contains fluoride. Fluoride is a component of rat poison. Fluoride is also a major component of the general anesthetics that we use in the operating room, and it dumbs you down and it makes you stupid. And so this is mass medication of the public, so you don't want to have fluoride in your water. Not only that, it kills you. If you look on toothpaste tubes now, they have a warning that you can die from the fluoride in the toothpaste. And children have died from just swallowing the normal amount of toothpaste that would be on the toothbrush for a child to brush their teeth.
I've heard that, and I've also heard there have been a number of deaths of when the children get the fluoride treatment
in the
from the dentist, they've died there too.
That's correct. And so fluoride is a poison, and this is a terrible hoax that has been perpetrated on the American public, and it's been put in the water for mass medication to make people less aware of what's happening to them for the New World Order.
When you say don't drink water out of the tap, what kind of water should you drink? I mean, you can get things like the brand name waters that are pretty expensive, or can you just put a filter on your faucet? I mean, I have one that's a carbon filter, charcoal filter.
Well, the best
is that sufficient?
If you're going to do it at home, the best thing to do is get reverse osmosis with carbon filtration under your sink,
mm-hmm.
and then that water will be fine. Or you can get bottled water, or you can have water delivered. But I don't use mountain spring water because that's not necessarily treated. I get either distilled water or purified drinking water. And then you also want to investigate the company that you're getting it from and find out how they are doing it. If it's done with carbon filtration, reverse osmosis, and ozonation, or if it's distilled, you're pretty safe.
Is there, I've often wondered about this, maybe you can answer it, is drinking distilled water good for you simply because it's liquid, or are you losing some other benefits of say, minerals or something?
Well,
else
that has always been proposed, but there's no real evidence to show that actually happens. And besides that, if you're eating a nutritious diet, that's going to be made up for anyway, so you don't have to worry about it. So you can go ahead. I drink distilled water.
Okay, so obviously a lot of water every day. Does that mean absolutely no coffee, no tea, no...
It just depends on how healthy you want to be. You know, if you don't care if you're not really healthy, then go ahead. You know, the thing is...
And I can't have my morning coffee.
I am... The whole point is what you're doing when you drink your morning coffee is you are developing an adrenaline debt and a cortisone debt because you drink coffee, which is a stimulant.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is it a nerve toxin, and not only is it a dehydrator, but it causes, the reason you get a lift from it, it causes your adrenal glands to pour out adrenaline. And that's what gives you that extra surge of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But as you do that, then your adrenal glands will eventually become depleted, and then you will feel let down, and then you will have to have another cup of coffee. And so what you're doing is you're constantly in debt
mm-hmm.
to your adrenals, and eventually they start wearing out, and that's one of the causes of fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome and things like that. So what you really want to do is get your body functioning and get enough sleep and stop eating sugar and all the things that help deplete you and wear you out, and then you don't need the coffee.
So what, it's not so much the coffee, it's the caffeine, yes?
That's correct. That's the main constituent, there are some oils in there that are not good for you either, but it's mainly the caffeine.
So, but the combination of the caffeine that people drink in coffee, in tea, in the soft drinks, and God knows what else caffeine is put into today. And I'm just thinking, as you mentioned the fibromyalgia, I know an awful lot of very young women who are suffering from that.
Right. And the thing is, let me tell you that the hoax about fibromyalgia. A woman or a man will go to the doctor and say, you know, doctor, I just hurt all over. I have pain in my muscles and my tissues. And the doctor examines the patient, does a whole lot of expensive tests, and then says, you have fibromyalgia. And the patient says, oh, doctor, that sounds bad. What does that mean? And he says, it means that you have pain in your muscles and your tissues. And the patient says, well, I told you that. And he says, yes, but I said it in Latin, so pay me. You see? But in fact, virtually every disease in medicine is either just the description of the symptoms or it's named after the doctor who first described the symptoms,
mm-hmm.
like Parkinson's or something like that. You see? And so fibromyalgia just says you have pain in your fibrous tissue and your muscles, because fibro means fibrous tissue, myo means muscle, and alga means pain. And
right.
So the doctor is only describing the symptoms that you gave him, and he's charging you for it. And then he will give you drugs which will only treat the symptoms. Now, when you take drugs to treat the symptoms, it is exactly the same as if you cut the wires to the check engine warning light on your dashboard and don't fix the motor.
Yeah.
So you're not solving anything, and when you take chemotherapy, radiation, high blood pressure medication, diabetes medication, any of those things, you are only treating symptoms. See, the average American, when they have a headache, will take an aspirin. But headaches are not caused by a deficiency of aspirin. Headaches are caused by too much tension, too much stress, not drinking enough water, eating the wrong food, not getting enough sleep, caffeine withdrawal, and many other causes. But none of the headaches that anybody has are ever caused by a deficiency of aspirin, all right? So why do we take an aspirin? Well, because that's all we've ever been taught to do, besides we want a quick fix. We don't want to go to bed earlier, eat right, stop eating sugar, stop drinking caffeine. We don't want to do that. We want to just take a pill to cover up the symptoms. But when you constantly take a pill for a headache and you constantly take an anti-inflammatory medication for your joint pains, and you constantly take antacids for your ulcers, eventually you have disregarded your problem, you've covered up the symptoms, but you've not addressed the underlying problem. So one day you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, you have cancer, you have multiple sclerosis, you have Parkinson's, you have some other disease, fibromyalgia, and you say, doctor, how did this happen? And the doctor says, we don't know. These things just happen. But they don't. We have given ourselves disease one day at a time by the way we've eaten and the way we've lived.
That's absolutely true.
That's right.
You know, I mean, I'm thinking of you know, a few times that I've gone to the doctor for whatever, And the truth is, their answer is always, let me give you a prescription.
That's right.
They have never once asked me questions like you're talking, like,
right.
what are you eating, or...
Right.
Even if they don't know. Yeah,
right.
And even if I say, well, you know, I've been under a lot of stress lately and I'm not getting any sleep, they sort of nod their head, but they don't go any further than that.
That's right. Stress is a major cause of disease because when a person is stressed, there are a lot of things that happen in the body. Number one, your stomach contracts so you can't digest your food. Your intestinal peristalsis stops so you can't eliminate your waste and you keep reabsorbing those toxins. And your adrenal glands pour out all sorts of adrenaline and cortisone suppresses your immune system. Now, when you are under constant stress, this is happening to your body all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so then your body starts breaking down, and then your immune system can no longer fight. Not only that, when you eat a load of sugar, all of your immune cells are paralyzed for 5 hours. When you have 1 minute of anger, your immune system is paralyzed for 6 hours. When you have 1 minute of uninhibited laughter, your immune system is made better for 24 hours.
Well, I forget who it was. Was it Norman Cousins who
right.
cured himself with
That's
laughter?
Right. That's right.
Yeah. We'll talk about that and lots more with Dr. Lorraine Day. I'm Barbara Simpson on Coast to Coast AM. Question for you. What would you be willing to do if it meant you would be healthy? If it meant that you would not get such diseases as cancer, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, AIDS, all the others, would you change your diet? Would you be willing to change your lifestyle? Would you give up meat and dairy and coffee and tea and soft drinks? Or is all that just too high a price to pay? What's the alternative? Maybe a question really should be, how would you like to die? Or maybe, as they used to say, pick your poison. Maybe that's really what it is. Our guest is Dr. Lorraine Day, and we're talking about things like that. What's poison in our lives? How does it affect us? And how can we protect ourselves? This is Barbara Simpson on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Lorraine Day is my guest. I'm Barbara Simpson with you on Coast to Coast AM. Doctor, we're talking about your 10 laws of health and the 10 things. The first was food. We're talking about the different kinds of food and water. Anything else you want to add to that aspect of it before we move on?
Well, again, sugar is one of the biggest causes of problems in a person's health. When people eat sugar, they actually deplete their bodies of the B vitamins. And when you are depleted of the B vitamins, you get all sorts of diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing is when they eat sugar, refined sugar, their insulin shoots up. They deplete the insulin. They deplete the insulin in their pancreatic cells. And so they'll get adult onset diabetes one of the biggest causes of diabetes in children is milk drinking. And when
how
you
does
drink,
that work?
Well, in cow's milk, there is a protein that is essentially identical to a protein that are normally in the child's pancreatic cells. So when this foreign protein comes in and from the cow, when they drink the milk, the body produces antibodies against this foreign protein. But the antibody can't tell the difference between the protein in the milk and the protein in the pancreatic cells, and so it turns on its own pancreatic cells and destroys them. And the child is then has to be on insulin for the rest of their lives. And the number one cause of blindness is diabetes, and the number two cause of amputation of the feet and legs is diabetes.
Right.
And I have amputated a lot of legs for diabetes, and it's a horrible thing to have to do. And yet, if people would just not give their children milk, and say, oh, well, my child needs milk. No, your child doesn't need milk. The only milk that a child needs is mother's milk until it's weaned, and then it needs no milk. We're the only animal that drinks the milk of another animal, and we're the only animal that drinks milk after we're weaned.
Mm-hmm.
The cows and other animals are smarter than we are. We don't need it. You can drink rice milk or some other milk like that that's from a vegetable source, and then you won't have that problem. You can get that at one of your health food stores, and sometimes major markets are carrying rice milk. So you can avoid certain things like that. And cheese, of course, is also a killer because cheese is just concentrated milk, and it's very hard on the body. And many of the cheeses are not even pasteurized, and so they contain lots and lots of bacteria. And milk, in fact, contains something like 10,000 bacteria per teaspoonful, and most of those bacteria are either pus bacteria or fecal bacteria. And the government allows 10,000 per teaspoon and says that that's okay.
I remember the first time I knew about these different standards for the amount of contamination that's allowed in food.
Yeah.
And they're called the filth standards.
Right.
I mean, I thought it was a joke, and
no.
It's not.
No,
they actually do.
Certain number of spider legs that are allowed in chocolate and things like that.
That's right.
Yeah.
And even rodent droppings.
Right.
They have allowable levels of rodent droppings
right.
in food. If you really want to be disgusted, you just need to look at some of those things.
Well, but then when you start talking about meat,
yeah.
That is so filthy just from the slaughter room floor. In fact, I'm going to try to use delicate language here, but the meat inspectors will say about the meat, we used to wash the excrement off of the meat, and then we cleaned it off of the meat. Now we let the consumer eat it off of the meat.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a wonderful, an awful headline in, I think it was the San Francisco Examiner about a year or so ago, in regard to the fact that the government was going to allow tumorous beef, pussy beef, and diseased parts of animals. They had acceptable levels of that in our food,
yeah.
and but it was in the headline. You know, usually that's buried in a story on page
right.
27.
Right.
This was in the headline. I was glad it was there. It was disgusting, but I was glad it was there because I talk about things like this on the air, and I'm sure a lot of people think I'm exaggerating and, you know, trying to scare people, but it's true.
Well, that's right. And see, the meat producers suffer from the same blindness that doctors do. They think that if they just cut out the tumor, that the rest of the animal is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But see, cancer is a systemic disease. When your child was young and, say, had the chicken pox, you wouldn't take them to a surgeon and say, I want you to cut out all the pox marks in the skin so my child will be well.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous, because chicken pox is a systemic disease. It just manifests itself locally with these spots in the skin. Cancer is a systemic disease. It is affecting the entire body. It just manifests itself in a tumor, either in one place or multiple places in the body. Cutting out that tumor does not solve the problem, because it is the body that is sick. And the reason women who have breast cancer in one breast frequently will get cancer in the other breast is because after they have the first breast removed, they still keep doing all the things that cause the cancer to develop, and they'll get it in the second breast.
Mm-hmm.
What you've got to do is not cut off both breasts. What you've got to do is reverse those factors that allowed the cancer to develop. By the way, caffeine drinking is one of the major causes of tumors in the breast because the breast is a water-driven organ, and when you dehydrate it, it becomes tumorous. Abortion is one of the big causes of breast cancer.
You know, that's an interesting story that's just beginning to get a little bit more attention, but of course certain organizations are very opposed to women knowing that there's any link between abortion and breast cancer.
That's right. The National Cancer Institute is one of them that's covering this up. I point this out in my video, Cancer Doesn't Scare Me Anymore. By the way, a lot of this information is on my website at www.drday.com. I've got there information on vaccinations, information on mad cow disease, how you reverse attention deficit disorder without drugs, and a personal letter to anybody who has cancer or any other serious disease with huge amounts of information just free on the website. Plus, I've got all the videos there where people can learn how to be well and reverse their diseases, plus the book AIDS What the Government Isn't Telling You, so you can learn all about the AIDS issue as well. For those who are not on the Internet, you can go to drday.com, www.drday.com, for all that free information. For those who aren't on the Internet, if you want more information about the videos, you can call 1-800-574-2437. That's 1-800-574-2437. So anyway, the video Cancer Doesn't Scare Me Anymore shows that the National Cancer Institute, I have on the video pictures of the website of the National Cancer Institute. There are two sides to the website that are side by side. One is for patients in patient language, mm-hmm. and the other is for doctors in medical language. The doctor side, or the healthcare practitioner side, tells about the link between abortion and breast cancer, but on the patient side, they don't tell you.
So it really is more well known than
absolutely,
we think.
Absolutely, but they are not going to tell you because there is such an agenda to promote abortion. This is big time. This is, again, part of population control. And so they are getting children sexually active. By the way, let me tell you another thing. The average age of puberty now is 10 years old for little girls and boys, and 9 years old for little black girls, and 8 years old for 50% of black children, and 3% of little black girls enter puberty at age 3.
Oh, come on.
That's right. This is medically documented. And so the reason that this is happening, you see, 100 years ago, the average onset of puberty in America was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's gone down every decade. It's gone down by about 6 months, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's way down to age 9 and 10. So these little children are being robbed of their childhood because when they're supposed to be playing with dolls and dollhouses and things like that, little girls are becoming pregnant. So children are having children, and this is a terribly damaging thing because the parents who want their children to behave themselves and not get into trouble so they will have their school interrupted, so they will have their health impaired, so they will have all sorts of problems with sexually transmitted diseases and AIDS and all that, the very parents who are trying to instruct their children how to behave are feeding them the diet that will cause this to happen. And here's how that happens. When you eat a mainly meat-based diet rather than a plant-based diet, there are certain bacteria that are formed in the intestine. When hormones are produced in the body, they are meant to circulate once, and then they are conjugated or attached to by another molecule that inactivates them and has them excreted from the body. But mm-hmm. when these bacteria from meat eating and a high luxury type of diet with sugar and meat and all that, the intestine produces these bacteria or contains these bacteria which interrupt the conjugation or inactivation of the hormone, and then the hormone gets circulated over and over in the body, and it causes this early onset of puberty.
So the child, the little girl, has higher levels of estrogen.
Of estrogens, and the little boys have testosterone. And so it's happening, and so little boys are acting out in school, and they're becoming sexually active very early, and when they should be out playing ball, they are they are looking at little girls. And the whole thing is all askew, and parents don't realize that when they're feeding these children fast food and processed food and a high meat-based diet and all this milk and all the hormones that are in the that are additionally added to it, plus the hormones that are in the animal normally, plus all the pesticides that the animal concentrates in their own flesh, these are the things that are causing these children to enter puberty at a young age. And then when a young girl is exposed to a long-term estrogen exposure in her body, she has a much higher rate of breast cancer. So now the feminists, you see, are demanding unlimited abortion, all right? And then they're demanding that the government do something about the incidence of breast cancer. They don't understand that exactly what they're demanding that be given to them at government expense is actually one of the things that's causing their breast cancer.
And when you're talking about the abortion, as I understand it, it's that obviously when the woman gets pregnant, your body starts producing different hormones and getting the body ready to have a baby and to nurse a baby, and the breast is stimulated with these various hormones. When it's interrupted by an abortion, which ends the pregnancy, the body is left with all these higher levels. And if that's done, and a number of women do have more than one abortion, this will set you up for breast cancer. Is that a correct interpretation?
Right. Here's what happens. When a woman gets pregnant, there is a great surge of estrogen. Estrogen is makes these breast cells very unstable and more cancer-prone. But when the pregnancy is carried on to term, then other hormones kick in to stabilize those cells and to turn them into milk-producing cells. But when the pregnancy is artificially interrupted, and this appears not to happen when a woman has a normal miscarriage, nature seems to take care of it, but when it's artificially interrupted, those breast cells and this huge surge of estrogen, those breast cells are left hanging out there unstable and become more cancer-prone. Now, they did a study where they took two groups of experimental animals. All of the animals in both groups were pregnant. They injected every animal in both groups with a cancer-causing substance. Then they let one group carry their babies to term, and the other one they aborted. In the group that carried their babies to term, even though they'd been injected with a cancer-causing substance, only 5% of them got breast cancer. Mm-hmm. In the ones that their pregnancy was interrupted artificially, 77% develop breast cancer.
Wow.
That's right. And that was just one abortion.
And if you look at, and again, I mentioned the number of young women I know with the fibromyalgia, I can't tell you how many young women I know in my circle of friends and their children who have breast cancer. And I'm not talking about women in their 40s. I'm talking about women in their 20s.
Oh, that's right. Breast cancer was unheard of, you know, several decades ago, before the age of like 50 or 60. Now it's happening at 18-year-olds. And again, you see, they're eating and living their way into cancer and all of these other diseases as well. But on one of my videos called Believing is Seeing, I have a whole lot of testimonials of people who have reversed their cancers, breast cancer, colon cancer, leukemia, all other kinds of cancer, including infertility. A woman who had uterine cancer and polycystic ovaries, and the doctor said she had to have her uterus out and her ovaries out. She refused, and she went on the plan that I used to get well. And I had counseled her when I was speaking in Northern California 1 year, and the next year she was back with her two twin babies. She had had no fertility drugs, and the doctors practically fell off their chairs. She cured her uterine cancer and had babies.
And it was just she
just didn't, by this normal, natural plan.
Which we need to go into more detail on in terms of...
what is it?
What is it exactly? Okay. And that's what you did. You said
this
you
is
had,
what I did.
You had breast cancer. That growth that you had, I've seen the picture on your website and the video as well. Was that the cancer, or was there cancer besides that?
Well, oh, there was much cancer besides that. Mm-hmm. I had cancer all through my chest wall. I had cancer in the nodes under my arm and the nodes in my neck. That was just the most obvious place. Mm-hmm. and I had a portion of that major tumor debulked just for pain relief, and they sent me home to die, but all the rest of the cancer was left in place. And from the time I started on the total plan until I was cancer-free was 8 months, and then it took me an additional 10 months to regain my strength. So in 18 months, I was totally well and cancer-free, and I remain cancer-free, and it's been 9 years.
And when you were first diagnosed, was it ahead of time? I mean, or were you diagnosed with this terminal cancer right away?
No. I had a small tumor that was about half the size of an almond, and it was diagnosed by biopsy at both Loma Linda University Medical Center as well as Scripps Hospital in San Diego. I had two biopsies, and it was looked at by many different pathologists, and they all agreed it was cancer, and it had already invaded my chest wall. In other words, they couldn't get all the cancer with a local excision. So mm-hmm. they wanted to do a mastectomy and give me radiation, and I refused. And, of course, all of my doctor colleagues thought I was crazy. They said, you will die. And I said, no. But the thing is, at the beginning, all I understood was to change my diet. The diet that I changed to was the right diet, but it's not enough by itself to cure cancer or any other serious disease. It's only part of this 10-step plan. You've got to do all the rest of the plan with 100% commitment. One of the biggest causes of disease and one of the biggest causes of the inability to reverse the disease is television. When people watch television, television dumbs you down so much that you can't understand anymore, because your frontal lobes, where you make your judgments and your decisions, they become actually atrophied and they become hypnotized when you watch television. And television is such a mind-numbing experience that you cannot get well if you continue to watch television.
So that one of your steps to getting well is no television?
But that's just an adjunct. That's not one of the 10 steps. But I found that out. I had to stop watching television. I had to stop reading newspapers, because all that bad news and all that propaganda, you have to concentrate on studying about health issues and listening to high-quality music, such as high-quality religious music or classical music. You cannot even have any of rock music or anything else coming in, because that actually disturbs your cell structure.
Now, I'm saying this a little tongue-in-cheek, but I'm not really. What about talk radio? I mean, if I had to give, I don't watch television, but if I had to give up reading news stories and not listening to the kind of radio we're doing now,
talk radio, your brain is in beta waves, and those are the learning waves.
Oh, okay.
When you watch television, your brain is in alpha waves, and those are the hypnotic waves.
Okay, well, then I'm safe.
Right.
At least on that part of it. We're talking with Dr. Lorraine Day, and we're going to find out the rest of the ways that she helped cure herself. And she said she has been cancer-free for 9 years. Sounds pretty good to me. I'm Barbara Simpson. This is Coast to Coast AM.
And then the last part of the plan is benevolence. Everybody is so self-centered and selfish, and you look at the book titles in the stores and the business section now, they're all about how you get yours and run all over everybody else. We've got to be benevolent. We've got to learn to love our enemies. Love your enemies and do good to those who hate you, because if you don't, it'll kill you.
It really comes down to a lot of it. I mean, aside from the fuel that you put in your body and that type of thing, and the other part of it is attitude. And I mentioned Norman Cousins before,
right.
And I forget the disease he had.
He had ankylosing spondylitis. That was an autoimmune disease. It's an orthopedic autoimmune disease. And it's supposed to be non-curable. But, of course, with this plan, many people have cured their ankylosing spondylitis.
Mm-hmm.
And he cured it with just laughter.
Yeah, I remember he wrote a book about it.
Right.
And he would get videos and movies out and watch Marx Brothers movies and just laugh laugh and laugh.
That's right.
But it had to do with the attitude and what laughter does to your body in terms of reducing stress.
Yes, you can measure it medically. It boosts the immune system. It causes your T cell and your lymph killer cells to increase their activity and increase their number, your natural killer cells, and they can fight disease much better. So it has all sorts of very measurable effects on your body. The average child laughs 400 times a day, whereas the average adult frequently laughs less than once a day.
Wow.
And you see, this is what's happening, and people get so stressed, and they don't learn how to handle their stress. And when that happens, their bodies are chronically in a state of stress, pouring out all of these immune-suppressing hormones, and they're killing themselves slowly.
You mentioned infertility earlier.
Yes.
That's another thing that seems to be epidemic today, and I don't like using that word.
True, and there are a lot of things. First of all, fluoride in the water and fluoride in toothpaste and all that is reducing the sperm count in men. That's number one, big time, big time. And women are suffering from ovarian cysts and endometriosis because, again, they're violating these 10 laws of health. They're eating a meat-based diet and too much sugar and too much rich food, and nobody's getting sleep. Again, all you have to do is obey these simple rules, and women will get pregnant.
What about the trend today for women to be so thin?
Well, it is the trend, except you don't see very many of those except on the model runways.
The rest of us are too fat.
Everybody is overweight because they're eating a fat-based diet.
Yeah.
Now people are going to a high-protein diet. That is one of the most destructive things people can do, is eat a high-protein diet. It is damaging to the kidneys, to the joints, to the heart, and to everything. A high-protein diet will make you lose weight because it makes you sick. It actually throws you into ketosis, which can be a medical emergency, and that's what happens to diabetics when they get real sick. And it also dehydrates your body. A high-protein diet dehydrates your body so much that you will lose weight because you're losing water, but it's very detrimental to you. People say, well, how can you get enough protein when you're eating a vegan diet?
That's what I wondered, yeah.
Well, the thing is, the average American eats 3 to 4 times more protein than they need. And all of this protein, again, is very destructive to the kidneys and the joints and everything, because the average American eats 132 grams of protein. If any woman eats over 40 grams of protein a day, she will become osteoporotic, and she will increase her chances of getting cancer dramatically.
Hmm.
Now, if you look at the vegetable kingdom, the amount of protein in spinach is 49%. Spinach is 49% protein. Cauliflower is 40% protein. Green beans are 26% protein. Pumpkin seeds are 21% protein. Lemons are 16% protein. Wheat is 17% protein. And, of course, there's all the legumes like beans and peas, and they're 20 to 30% protein. So you get plenty of protein, and you don't have to worry about mixing beans and rice. You get all the essential amino acids you need, and your body can store them. And so there's tremendous information in the medical literature, if doctors would just look at it. Articles from the New England Journal of Medicine, American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, all peer-reviewed, very high-quality, sophisticated journals showing that it is dairy products and meat and poultry and fish that are actually causing all the problems. The first study showing that animal protein could cause calcium loss and therefore osteoporosis was published in 1930 in the Journal of Biological Chemistry, over 70 years ago.
Boy, you'd never know it by what they tell you today.
Well, that's right, because the Meat and Dairy Council wants you to drink milk and eat meat. But it is that is one of the biggest sources of disease. Even the American Cancer Society says that a meat-based diet contributes enormously to cancer, all kinds of cancer. So you don't need to eat meat. The thing is, if you think you need to eat meat, you need to eat the cow to get your protein. Then let me ask you, where does the cow get its protein? It gets it from eating grass. Okay?
And you're just too logical.
That's where you're supposed to get it. But you want our food secondhand. The cow's smarter than we are. It eats the food firsthand.
The other about dairy is just I'm always astounded at how many diseases are related to dairy allergies. For example, asthma in children. Again, one of these epidemics that seem to be going around with children. And the first thing they say to look at is a dairy allergy.
Well, that's right. Dairy and lack of water are the biggest causes of allergies and asthma. Eating dairy products, that's not only milk, but yogurt and cheese and butter and all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Eating milk products as well as dehydration, because here's what happens. When the body is dehydrated, it produces a water regulator to make sure that the brain and the vital organs get enough of the water that's remaining in the body. And so to do that, it produces the water regulator, which is histamine. Now, when you have histamine produced in your body, then you start having a stuffed up nose and runny eyes. And so you either go to the doctor or go to the drugstore and you buy antihistamines, which dry out your body more.
Mm.
You know what happens if you take some of those over-the-counter drugs.
Yep.
And so what you're doing is you are covering up the problem, making it better only transiently, and your body is becoming more dehydrated after you do it. So if you keep doing that, you have a cycle. Your body is getting more and more dehydrated, so your asthma will get worse, your allergies will get worse, your doctor will give you stronger and stronger medication, and you go into a downward cycle. Now, let me tell you about high blood pressure. High blood pressure is caused mainly by two things: too much animal fat in the diet and not drinking enough water. Those two things make your blood thick. When you've got too much fat in your blood, it makes your blood thick. When you don't drink enough water, you can't make the serum portion of your blood, which is the liquid portion. You still have the same number of red and white blood cells, but you don't have enough fluid in the blood, and so then your blood is thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have also a smaller volume of blood because you don't have enough water to make the serum, and so your body can detect that, so it doesn't want to have any empty space in your blood vessel, so it causes a narrowing of the blood vessels, so the amount of blood you have will fit perfectly in your blood vessels. So now you have thicker blood that has to be forced through narrower tubes, and so your heart has to pump at a higher pressure, and this is what causes high blood pressure. So then what happens? You go to your doctor, you're already dehydrated, and your doctor gives you diuretics, which take more water out of your body.
You know something? That's insanity.
That's right.
And that's medicine today. We're talking with Dr. Lorraine Day. We will continue right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Barbara Simpson. Get around that?
Well, the way you get around it, first of all, you can stop eating meat completely, because meat, poultry, and fish, because all of it's bad for you anyway, and it's very diseased. And then you can go to fruits, grains, and vegetables, and the best way is to grow your own. If you can't, try to get organically grown, and that's the best that you can do.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the vitamins are concerned, your concern is about the source of the vitamins, and then what else is in them. For example, isn't there concern about, with mad cow disease, the fact that gelatin is used in a lot of food products.
Yes.
And gelatin comes from cows.
That's right. And so there's going to be a mad cow disease epidemic like the world has never seen before of any epidemic. It's going to be everywhere because there are many, many products, even many of the supplements people are taking, many of the hormones like thyroid hormone come from animals, and all of these are potentially contaminated. So it's going to be a terrible problem. People have to start learning how to live healthfully so they don't have to take all of these medications. The fourth leading cause of death in America is the medications prescribed by doctors.
Mm-hmm.
The number one leading cause of falls in the elderly is the medications prescribed by their doctors. You're going to have to learn how to start handling your health so, because there's not going to be any medical care pretty soon anyway. That's where all these HMOs are going. They're going towards denying more and more care. But the good news is, you can be well, and you can get well on your own if you follow this plan.
Just in this, I don't mean this to be an insolent kind of question, but if we do all of this and we stay healthy, what are we going to die of?
Well, we're not meant to die of disease. There are many instances where people just get old and they go to sleep and they die. You're not supposed to die of disease of a horrible weight.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody says you're going to live forever. But my grandfather lived to be 94. He ate and lived this way. He lived to be 94, and he died in his sleep. And he had all of his mental faculties up to the end. He walked and walked 5-6 miles a day because he was healthy. So that's the way you want to go. You don't want to go from some disease like cancer where you are horribly in pain for long periods of time, or have become a heart disease cripple, cardiac cripple, or anything like that. You don't want to do that. You want to be healthy until you die.
Well, you know, that really goes along with, I think, that one of the greatest fears of people today is that they don't want to die in a convalescent home or a hospital hooked up to tubes and wires and stuff, keeping them alive. And I use that in quotes, because that's not necessarily what's happening. I think what's happening today a lot of time is they don't give you what you need.
Right.
So you die. That's
right.
Another way of dying.
Euthanasia, right.
Yeah, and they don't call it that, but that's what it is. But people don't realize that there are ways to try to be healthier, and I think that's the essence of what you're saying. Is
well, that's
that,
right. You know, people don't fear heart disease nearly as much as they fear cancer.
Yes, and that's
right. And yet you're
right.
Just as dead of heart disease as you are of cancer, and 50% of people who die from a heart attack, their first symptom is sudden death, so
mm-hmm.
they don't have any chance to change the way they're eating and living. If you develop cancer, you can change the way you're eating and living and reverse your cancer if you learn how to do it, and it's, again, a simple process. Although it's a hard process because you have to be committed to it, but it's inexpensive. All you have to buy is food. The sunlight, the exercise, the fresh air, the sleep, the freedom from stress, the attitude, and the benevolence, they're all free.
Yeah.
You see? And people somehow, but they don't want to take charge of their health or their body. They want to go to somebody and say, "You make me well." People have to stop that. And one of the biggest dumbing down effects, as I'm telling you, is television. Television and the rock music that young people are listening to, it's actually reprogramming not only their brain but their cells. They did studies in mice where they had them listen. One group listened to rock music, another listened to classical music, and another had no music, and they put them through all the mazes.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones listening to classical music could do the maze better. The ones that listened to rock music became so confused they couldn't do anything, and eventually they started eating each other, and they had to stop the experiment.
They also, that infamous story out of Japan, I guess it was about a year ago, where they had a children's television series, some kind of cartoon that they had, and the flicker rate on the screen actually caused the children to go into convulsions and
yeah.
seizures.
Well, that's been known in medicine for a long time. The strobe lights and flickering lights can cause seizure activity.
Right.
We've known about that for a long time. And so whether they were doing that inadvertently or purposely, I don't know. But yes, that happens, absolutely.
Yeah, it did. And as a matter of fact, when they brought it into this country, they changed the rate because it had to do with the editing and everything else. But I mean, if you look at, for example, MTV even, God forbid, you go to the movies and see a preview, each scene of the preview is about a half a second long.
That's right.
You almost get dizzy watching it, and that's exactly what you're talking about.
You do get dizzy. That's right, and they're doing that for the effect because it hypnotizes you. If you take someone who never watches television and you put them in front of a television set, it will take 45 minutes for the brain to go from beta waves, which are the active learning waves, into the hypnotic alpha waves, where you bypass your judgment center and all of this garbage goes into your head and you're not able to filter it out. It becomes part of you and part of your subconscious. If you take that same person and put them in front of a television set the next day, their brain will go into alpha waves within 5 minutes. And the third day, their brain will go into alpha waves in 5 seconds.
Mm.
And this is what's happening. Everybody, you know, when you have a child that's sitting in front of the television set, you can call them to come to dinner or whatever. They don't even hear you.
Yeah, they don't.
Because they are hypnotized.
They're just sitting there sort of staring at the screen.
And all of this violence and murder and guns and sex and all that are going into their little minds and into their subconscious and becoming part of them without them able to discern whether it's right or wrong, because it's bypassing their frontal lobes, which is their judgment center.
What effect, just out of curiosity, does somebody sitting in front of a computer all day, is that sort of the same thing or not?
No, it's not the same thing, because their brain is in beta waves when they're doing that, because they're actually doing something that's constructive, whereas television, you are passive. You're totally. Now, if you're sitting in the running computer games, that's different.
Yeah.
I'm talking about where you're actively working and composing letters or whatever on the computer. It's a totally different thing.
What kind of reaction? I mean, you've changed so dramatically, at least publicly, on a lot of things in your philosophy with your experiences over the last 20 years. What's been the reaction of your compatriots in the traditional medical business to you today, the Dr. Lorraine Day of today versus 10 years ago?
Well, of course, 10 years ago, I was doing the same thing that I'm doing now, only on the AIDS issue.
Yeah.
But the surgeons, again, throughout the world, were very supportive of me. It was only the doctors who never went in the operating room, who didn't know what was going on, who would get very mouthy about things, and they didn't know what they were talking about, and it was all a political thing. But interestingly enough, the doctors are very supportive that I'm willing to stand out and say something that is unpopular, even the doctors who may not agree with me. But the reason they don't agree with me is because of all the bias and prejudice that is built into us, and they won't even look at the facts. I've got in front of me now, and I can always present to any doctor, dozens and dozens and dozens of medical articles showing that the main cause of osteoporosis is too much animal protein in the diet. It is not a lack of calcium. I can show them from the medical literature all of the associations between a high animal food-based diet and cancer of many different organs. I can show them that the sources of calcium in vegetables are higher in many cases than in milk and animal products. I can show them that that diabetes, the juvenile onset diabetes, the main cause is milk drinking. I can show them that if people who drink milk have a much higher incidence of developing cataracts in their eyes. I can show them all of this.
They don't want to see it.
Well, that's right. They don't want to see it because it scares them, because if they believe this, then they're going to have to start doing something different in their practice.
And maybe in their lives as well. Might not be a bad idea. We're talking with Dr. Lorraine Day, and we will be back. We're at the top of the hour, but she is with us, and there's lots more to talk about on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Barbara Simpson.
And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
mental illness, gotten rid of schizophrenia and all that by changing the way they're eating and living.
You know, in terms of that, we touched on it just briefly earlier, the children who are disruptive, the trend today is to, give them Ritalin or other drugs to calm them down and make them conform. But the damage done by those drugs is dramatic.
Well, that's right. And the American Psychiatric Association describes a hyperactive child, which is the target child for these drugs like Ritalin and Adderall and all that. Here's the way to describe them. This is a quote from the American Psychiatric Society. A child who exhibits behavior such as fidgeting, squirming, answering questions before being called on, difficulty playing quietly, engaging in physically dangerous activities such as running out into the street without looking, or a one who has difficulty following instructions. Now, that's just like that's a normal kid.
Especially little boys.
That's right, and they want to put them all on drugs. On my website at drday.com, you don't have to buy anything. You just look at the website. It tells you how to reverse attention deficit disorder without drugs right there.
You know, you mentioned earlier what was done to you because you spoke out against some things. I was looking at Forbes magazine this afternoon. There's a man named Dr. Peter Bregan who speaks out against Prozac and Ritalin and all of these drugs. And boy, what a hit piece that was on him.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, and I just saw that today. That's in the current issue. And what it really was just undermining him and making him look to be, and he's the one who speaks out against this kind of drugging of children.
Right. Well, all of us who speak out, now one person who is another friend of mine, all of us kind of outcasts hang out together. Anne Blake Tracy wrote the book Prozac, Panacea or Pandora.
Yes, I've interviewed her.
And she's a friend of mine, and she has been treated that same way by the press.
Doesn't surprise me at all, and it's really shocking. Let's go on to the west of the Rockies line to Provo, Utah. Mark, good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead with a question. Thank you.
Okay. Two brief questions. What for Dr. Day, what is the effectiveness of soy bean milk or soy-based products, and what about sunburn? I have so-called fair skin. If I'm outside for an hour, I'll accumulate what turns into a fairly painful sunburn. And yet you mentioned that being outside in the sunlight, it's good for vitamin D and other health purposes. How do I deal with that?
All right. The first one was soy products. What about soy products? I do not advocate soy products. First
Why?
Of all, soy products are almost all processed. And even things like tofu have MSG in them. And you want to eat your food as close to nature as possible. Soy also has enzyme inhibitors in them, which do not seem to be destroyed with cooking. And so they will inhibit your enzymes. So you can get along just fine without soy. And particularly if it's a patient with cancer or some other serious disease, I do not advocate soy products. That's number one.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Number two, sunburn. You never want to get sunburned. If you are fair-skinned, I am fair-skinned too. So you have to go out not at the hottest time of the day and work up gradually. I can be out now for an hour at a time, but I don't go out at the hottest time of the day. I live in the Palm Springs area where recently it's been 116 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go out except very early in the morning or very late in the afternoon. You do not want to get burned because burning is very detrimental. You only want to slowly get tanned.
What about using sunscreens?
No, sunscreen, again, sunscreen, many of the sunscreens actually cause skin cancer.
In what way? What do you mean?
Well, some of the oils are very detrimental to the skin, and they actually contribute to skin cancer. There are medical articles documenting that. You can even find that on the Internet if you look for it. So I do not advocate suntan lotion. I don't ever use it. I don't wear sunglasses either because you need the light in your eyes. Naturally, I don't look directly at the sun, but you need the light in your eyes. It's helpful for your eyes to get the sunlight on them.
Okay, let's go to the east of the Rockies line to St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada. Good morning, Paul. How are you? You're on Coast with Barbara and Dr. Lorraine Day.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
I just want to tell the doctor I agree with about 99.9% of what she says. And I've read a lot about a lot of these topics, but I find that it is hard to tell, say, relatives or somebody about certain things that happen because they don't read it in a secularized media. And I wonder if you find that as, and I'll give an example. If, I don't know if you've ever heard of a book called Beyond Abortion.
No,
I have not.
It's about fetal experimentation.
Yes, we've talked about that. But so you're just saying, how do you deal with people who don't believe
because
this kind of stuff?
Because if you say, you know, oh, well, this has been, you know, well, American physicians have been flying to other countries for 50 years to do certain things that our public would not have accepted then, but we've been mentally programmed to accept it now. And they say, well, I don't want to read that, or that's not true, and I've never read anything like that. And you say, well, here, you know, if I, for instance, give information that you have or someone else, they never seem to want it because it's not out of the mainstream.
That's a tough one. Dr. Day, how
well, again,
do you deal with that?
You can imagine how many people that I might broach this subject or many other subjects, because I have a lot more information other than medical information since
sure.
my episodes and speaking out on the AIDS issue. I was contacted by very, very high-level people, and I've got documents from the government that were smuggled to me and all that on a lot of different issues that people don't want to know about. All I do is if I'm in contact with someone who has a disease, I will share with them the information that got me well, but then I watch their eyes. If their eyes glaze over, I just stop and I just say, thanks, it's been nice talking to you, and I move on to the next person. The thing is, you don't want to cast pearls before swine. You just go and ask, you know, just take it to the people who want it.
Yeah.
And you can't, you have to give up the idea that you can convince the world of anything.
Well,
but there are a lot of people who want to know. So the last time I was on this program, there were 50,000 hits on my website in 48 hours. There are a lot of people who want to know.
Yeah. Well, they want to know because you're saying things that I think a lot of people have suspected or maybe even believed themselves but never found anybody else who thought that way, and they thought they were the only one who questioned the doctor.
Well, that's right. And doctors are not gods. And as I said earlier in the program, doctors have a higher suicide rate and a shorter life expectancy than all of you listening out there.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you go to them for your health?
Because we've been trained to.
That's right. They've been trained to, they've been programmed to, and they don't think that there's a way to get well. But there is a way to get well. Go to my website, and you can see the information there. I have a slideshow there where you can see a whole lot of people who are giving their testimonies right on the website. Read the information there, download it, and spend time perusing it, and you will see that it makes sense.
And ultimately, then, you have to make up your own mind, because that's really what it's all about. I'm Barbara Simpson. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Call the 800 number, which is 1-800-574-2437 for more information about those things. 1-800-574-2437.
Okay, let's go to first-time caller line in Boise, Idaho. Jason, good morning.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years ago, I had brain surgery, and they thought I had a brain tumor, and to find out I didn't have a brain tumor. I had a abscess on the pituitary gland, and now basically my pituitary gland does not function, and now I'm on all different types of hormones, and I was wondering if the doctor could tell me anything that would, you know, better or reverse the pituitary function.
Well, again, you know, if you're obeying all these 10 laws of health, that gives you the best chance to allow any pituitary that you have left to function, and that's what I would suggest you do, and then see if you can decrease your medication under the eye, watchful eye of a healthcare practitioner. But I would do that because many times we suppress. I mean, the reason that so many people are taking thyroid is because their bodies are not working right, because they're not living and eating right. You cannot deprive your body of the proper nutrition and expect it to produce the hormones and whatever else you need in your body. So I would suggest that you get on the plan and do that, and you may be able to decrease your medication.
And you know, and thank you for that, Jason. The nice part of that, Dr. Day, is that you're not hurting yourself by going on the suggestions that you made, the 10 steps, because you're not taking anything that is
has no
foreign
side effects
to the body. That's right.
That's right. And it's virtually free. All you do is you have to buy food anyway. Just buy better food.
Exactly. Before we run out of time totally, I have one more question here I wanted to ask you that I had a note and we didn't get to it. Vaccines, I've done a lot of programs about the controversy over vaccines, not only how they're made, but also the numbers of them that are being required. I know that in Sacramento, the state capital of California, there are several bills going through requiring new vaccines to be added to the list before kids can get into preschool and certainly into kindergarten. How do you feel about all of that?
Vaccines are neither safe nor are they effective. They are deadly. They are tremendous contributors to autism and may be the only source of autism, tremendous contributors to sudden infant death syndrome, to cancer in young people and adults, and to almost every other thing. And they're grown in cells that have to be cultured and fed. And the cells are all fed with fetal calf serum, which has the potential of being infected with mad cow disease. They are deadly. If you go to my website at drday.com, I have a whole series of pieces of information on vaccinations that give you everything you want to know.
And probably a lot you didn't want to know.
But the thing is, you can protect yourself. They don't work. They don't work at all. That's why you have to keep getting booster shots, because they don't work. And they're really another part of population control, because they're making people sick.
Yeah. Mike in Seattle is calling on the West of the Rockies line. Mike, quick question for Dr. Day.
Yes. From listening to her, I've heard her mention the Bible and things like that. So I just wonder... in the Bible there are, rules for what we can eat and what we can't. And, there's Jesus that fed the loaves and fishes to the multitudes. And so I love seafood so much. I'm just wondering, is it because that the food supply is so corrupt? Is that why she advocates being a vegan?
Well, first of all, seafood is not permitted any fish.
I meant fish. That's
but
right.
The whole point, what we have to do is, I went back to the beginning, to the Garden of Eden diet. And again, I was an agnostic for all of my adult life. I was looking for answers on how to get well. And that was one place I looked, was in the Bible, because the answers are there. And so when the Pharisees came to Jesus asking about divorce, he said, yes, Moses allowed you to divorce because you're so stiff-necked, but it was not like that in the beginning. And it's the same way with the food. Other things were allowed, but you go back to the beginning, and in the Garden of Eden it was allowed fruits and grains, and then vegetables were added after sin. But it was fruits, grains, and vegetables. They weren't allowed to eat meat for a long, long time. And what happened to the life expectancy when they were allowed to eat meat? It went from 900 years down to about 100 years in just a few generations.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. So that's what happened. Okay.
And thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. But you said, and I kind of like the thought of that we weren't meant to die of diseases.
No.
We were meant to die of
old age.
Getting old and passing away quietly and peacefully in your bed.
Speaking of the Bible, Moses, when he was 120 years old, climbed Mount Sinai. I have climbed Mount Sinai. It is heavy duty, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He was 120 years old. His eyesight was perfect. He went up there and laid down and died. Abraham died that way. Sarah died that way. Many of the patriarchs died that way. That's the way we're supposed to die. We're not supposed to get all crippled up with diseases and die in pain.
Sounds good to me. Let's see if we get one more call in. Dan in Pennsylvania, quick question for Dr. Day.
Yes, I'd like to know about Paxil. I'll listen off the air.
Paxil is disastrous, and it's the same thing as Zoloft, just by another company, and same thing as Prozac. I discuss those drugs in detail on the video, Turn on the Light, Overcoming Anxiety and Depression Without Drugs. There's a high incidence of homicide with those, a high incidence of suicide, and many, many other side effects that are horrible. And the number one side effect is an increase in the depression, which is what you're taking it for anyway. And so I never promote those. And, in fact, I say that you should be off of them, but never abruptly. It takes a while to get off of them. You have to get on the plan.
And the sad part is in those so many of the school shootings, almost all of the kids
were on those drugs. That's correct.
And they don't bother to tell about the side effects. And you were talking about side effects of other drugs. The drugs that they give you for arthritis frequently, they will destroy your kidneys. You know, but they don't tell you that.
That's right. All drugs have mental effects too, and they don't tell you that.
Yeah. Well, I must tell you that I admire what you have done with your life since you went through all of this, and I'm so glad that you were able to be with us. Do you ever miss doing surgery?
No, I've done so many thousands of operations, and of course it's kind of nice to sleep at night. I didn't sleep at night for 20 years, you know, and I trained lots of doctors to do a good job in orthopedics. But there are very few people who have conquered cancer as I have and can show other people how to get well. So I really enjoy what I'm doing now because I can help so many more people.
Do you miss San Francisco?
Well, no, it took me a long time to get dried out down here, you know. And so I really like the warm weather, and I've adjusted to it very, very well, and the wide open spaces, too.
And got away from the fog of San Francisco.
That's right. Yeah.
Dr. Day, thank you so much for being with us, and I look forward to talking with you again. Her website is www.drday.com, the phone number 1-800-574-2437. I'm Barbara Simpson. I want to thank all of you for being with us on Coast. Hope Art is better with his back problems, and we'll be back with you tomorrow. And I'll see you next time. You can hear me on Saturdays on Coast and read my Monday columns on worldnetdaily.com. And as always, be careful what you pray for. You might get it.
Purchase cassette copies of this program, dial 1-800-917-4278. We'll be right back.